This is the Her Earth Medicine podcast, based around traditional Eastern medicine and naturopathic insight to support wellness and longevity. My name is Sandy Ross, and I am a naturopath and practitioner of traditional Chinese medicine. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Today on the podcast, I'm interviewing Philip Trubshaw, who is an expert in the area of understanding how traditional Chinese medicine correlates with the psyche or the mind. Phil graduated from the Northern College of Acupuncture, where he has postgraduate research in the psychopharmacology area of Chinese herbs and how they traditionally influence the mind. Phil is also a lecturer at the Northern College of Acupuncture. This episode dives into how we can connect traditional Chinese medicine to psychology and understands how emotions can actually manifest and affect our physical body. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Let's dive in and chat the Shen with Phil Trubshaw.
So welcome to the Her Earth Medicine podcast, Phil.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon, even.
Afternoon for us and good morning to you. So, Phil, we're going to be chatting about the Shen today, and this might be a new term for many of our listeners to tune into. But before we get chatting about the Shen, do you want to tell us how you became a TCM practitioner?
Sure. So, bit of a winding tale. So I started off one of those people who didn't really know what to do with life. So I started working in bars and things like that. Then I basically decided, I'm going to travel around Australia. So I went over there. I lived in Brisbane for a while and Port Douglas up in the tropics. And when I was there, I started training to be a chef and then came back to the UK with this idea of, I'm going to travel around the world, be a chef. After 2 years of being a chef, basically, if you've ever worked in a professional kitchen, and not very healthy environments. And so it really took its toll on me and decided, well, I need to do something that's a little bit more health focused and give me a bit more meaning and focus in life. And so I started getting into what you might call spirituality, reading books on Buddhism. And then there's this book called, like, it's really awful. It's not awful, but it's a bit of a new agey sort of spiritual book called The Celestine Prophecy. Do you know it?
No.
So it's about this guy who finds these sacred scrolls in South America, and they start teaching out all these things about life and, like, the unknown secrets of life, like how everything's connected through energy and how we exchange energy in our interactions. One of the things that starts you to get looking at is how events are connected together. So you might call it synchronicity or interconnectivity. And so I started going down this path of looking into how the meaningful experiences in my life connected together. And then one day sort of fell into a meditation after reading this particular chapter in a book and had this moment where all these experiences, like, from being a kid, my granddad had been a medic in the Second World War. And so he would be in the garden picking comfrey if someone fell over, injured themselves, for, like, helping heal wounds. And then things like, one of my earliest childhood memories was my dad reading Lord of the Rings to me. And in that, you've got Aragorn, who's like this warrior healer type dude who's going around sort of building himself up to be sort of king of Gondor and on the process saving everyone along the way. And then things like being into martial arts as a teenager. My friend used to use, his teacher used to give him this stuff called Dit Da Jiao, which is trauma liniment that you put on injuries so you can train more. And so all these things kind of came together in a flash, a moment, and this voice in my head popped up and went, acupuncture. And then I went on, I was like, that's interesting. Went on university website, found acupuncture as a degree in Salford. And then there was someone I was kind of a bit madly in love with at the time. And just like, let's go to Salford. That's where they're going. So I'm going to go to Salford. And, went there. And then that was like the start of my acupuncture journey. And it was almost like I followed just my intuition, and it took me to this world, and that was 13 years ago, and I've never looked back since, basically.
Cool. And I believe you're a lecturer at one of the colleges over there in the UK now too, is that right?
Yeah, so in the Northern College of Acupuncture, which is up in York, in this really sort of beautiful, old, stunning building on one of the ancient streets in York. So I teach there in, I started teaching philosophy in context. So that's looking at principles of ancient Chinese philosophy and how we use them in modern practice. And then now I'm also teaching on the herbs course there, which is sort of formulas and herbs, and then managing diseases and conditions, and then also do some more teaching on the acupuncture course as well. So yeah, pretty diverse number of things that I'm doing.
And then you're also in clinic, and you said your main clinical treatment that you focus on is Shen, which is what we're going to discuss in this podcast today. So for those tuning in for the first time to hear this word, do you want to maybe discuss what is Shen?
Shen's an interesting term within Chinese medicine. You know, we can describe it as spirit. But what does spirit mean? Like, that comes loaded with its own kind of cultural understandings. So how I think of Shen, if we look at it from a very basic perspective, you know, if we look at, say, Giovanni Masciosa, which I imagine you guys, that's your, like, core. You know, Masciosa is the guy everywhere you go, right, for foundations. His basics, the way he breaks it down is you've got Shen, two kind of terms. So you've got big Shen, and then you've got the breakdown of the five Shen. And so the Shen itself is a way of thinking about our consciousness, about our psychology, about the mind, or the psyche, and all the aspects of the psyche. So big Shen is the broader term for the five smaller Shen. The five smaller Shen correspond with the five elements. So if we went through the five element cycle, you've got Shen, which I think of as mind or consciousness, our awareness, our ability to sort of be present in a moment. Then we've got, if we went onto the earth element, we've got the Yi, which is, you could say intellect, or you could say intent as well, depending on which sort of translation you're thinking of. Then we go around into the metal element, and it's the Po. My Mandarin teacher would probably have a go at me for pronouncing it Po, but Po, I think, would be the right pronunciation. That is probably the one that we have least understanding of in sort of our culture, I think partly because we're disconnected, but it's like the bodily spirit. If you watch Kung Fu Panda, like, that's the epitome, I think, of it in a sense. But it's an innate animal spirit, I think of. And it's when we experience that, those moments where you knock something over and you catch it without thinking, it's sudden action. It's not thought out. It's just happening by itself. That's where it works. Seem to be the entering and exiting of jing through joints. Areas, so very much connected to going back to the earth when we die with the Po. It's one of the older kind of spirits, which came conceptually sort of early Zhou dynasty, I think. So a couple of thousand years ago, we had the Neijing Su Wen, then go another sort of 1,000 years, maybe 1,500 years before that, where you first start hearing about the Po at that particular time. Then we've got the Jir, which connects to the water element, which is the willpower. And that's really a long-term sort of development of the Yi. So we focus our mind for long enough, it becomes willpower, becomes focus. The Jir can also be seen in two different ways, of the Yang Jir, which means forced action in a way, something that we take control, where we drive things forward. Or you've got more like the Yin Jir, which is faith, knowing that things will work out. like sit back and allow everything to happen. And we have to have the movement and flow between those two things. Sometimes we can't influence things and sometimes we have to. And that's one of the, that's wisdom. Where wisdom comes from is the idea of how do we make the right decision? What's the right thing to do in this moment? That's where wisdom fits in. And then last but not least, we have the Hun. And the Hun is seen to be the ethereal soul. So if you started getting into, say, transcendental meditation, lucid dreaming, out-of-body experiences, that seems to be the place where, when we start talking about Shen, mostly we're talking about ethereal soul within sort of those new age kind of spiritual contexts. And the Hun is seen to be the coming and going of the Shen. So the Hun follows where the Shen comes and goes. And a lot of the time it's seen to be this, it's a bit like a spirit in the sense of it's fluid, active, hard to contain. And a lot of the time it's seen at night. So our dreams, for example, seem to be where our mind wanders off at night, and where our Hun goes is where, you know, our spirit is. And then we come back and bring all these ideas. This is where our inspiration and creativity come from. So if we think of, we have this part of our consciousness that wanders off into the collective unconscious, the greater unknown, and then brings back all these ideas, brings back intuition, brings back vision, brings back sort of clear ideas and understanding that we can then turn into, you know, a project, we can turn into artwork. Like that's where art comes from, for example, where people go into that darker part of consciousness and then they bring out, you know, some fantastic sort of piece of work. All of those things come from the Hun. So that's the five spirits. The collection of all of those together is Shen. And that's the bigger Shen concept.
Okay, do you reckon you could maybe go a little bit into how the Shen or the five spirits fit into the five elements in organ associations, and then maybe touch on the seven emotions with those organs?
Mm-hmm. So when we think about sort of five elements, say each of the elements, think about this movement, directionality, the movement of qi of each one. And each of those has this emotional expression. So if we look at the way that joy is supposed to express, the character for joy in Chinese is like a beating drum. And so this idea that the expression of joy should almost, this is my interpretation of it, by the way. This isn't sort of something I've got from a book. This idea of joy is like this vibration that goes out into the world. So when you feel happy, you project joy out into the world, and that reverberation carries itself outside. When you look at books like, I don't know if you ever read that book, Soaring Above, you know, it's modern sort of neuropsychology about how do I engage in our adult brain as opposed to our child brain when we react to things. So stuff goes down. Yeah, stuff goes down, and then what we basically do is we usually revert to our child brain. And there's this really interesting aspect in that book where he talks about if we walk around and we smile at someone, that person picks up our emotion. So we pass on joy, and then they take that on to the next person. So in every moment in which we experience joy and we share that with another person, we're actually, in a very subtle way, making the world a more joyful place. We kind of like pass it on contagiously, a bit like a virus. Like joy is like contagious. Yeah, yeah. Let's just change it up and have a happy, you know, if we all send out happiness, it reverberates around the world. And that's joy, that's Shen. The only thing with Shen is that consciousness and presence that comes from being in the moment. When we're not in the moment, we get lost. We get actually more caught up in our thought processes, which is more of the yi, more brain-centered, overthinking, obsessive thinking kind of idea. So when we're living from heart and engage with our Shen, we should be completely present, completely in the moment. And that's when we express joy, because outside of the moment, there isn't really anything but joy to express. That's how I think of fire element. When we look at the intellect, our culture really now sort of worships the intellect, worships the brain. So the yi, as the intent and the intellect, comes with some problems. We've basically made a world where we spend so much time in our heads, we've disconnected from everything else. So we're disconnected from our hearts and replaced it with head. Not to say that that's a bad thing, but our brains are a problem-solving machine. And if all we see is problems, like, we just go around solving problems. And that's not necessarily the accurate way that the world is set up. So if we're only focused on problems, we see problems, and then we're constantly looking for more and more problems. There's that phrase, like, if you're a hammer, all you see is nails. Mm. And when we, yeah. And so if we spend all our time thinking and looking for problems, all we see is more problems. And our brain starts to go through this cycle then of what's the next one, what's the next one. We become obsessive in our thinking. Our mind starts to spiral. Then we're disconnected from the present moment, disconnected from heart, but we try and think our way out of a problem. So the intellect, the brain, wants to think its way out of a problem, but it's a bit like being stuck in the mud. And it's like, imagine going into quicksand, or your feet are stuck in the quicksand. So you try and think your way out of it by putting your hands in, but then you're just more stuck. And you can't really think your way out of a problem. Therapist that I work with, he talks about this a lot, that if your brain is overactive, same idea, the yi being overactive, trying to focus on too many things, trying to overthink things, you only make things worse, because in that moment you're just looking for more problems, and our brains almost can't keep up with all of the variables that need to be dealt with. So the only thing to do is actually to step back away from it and let things sort itself out. But the brain wants to just keep going and going and going. Other aspect, if we think of the yi as intent, intent is one of these very ambiguous terms that gets thrown around in our world, I think. And I don't like the way that intent is seen to be. Like, it's just magical. Like, it just comes out of nowhere. Like, I'm just going to use my intent. For me, intent is a series of actions that we take in terms of a learning process. So every time I engage with a patient, I've spent however many years studying, so 3-year degree in acupuncture. In that 3 years, we learn how to program in the system of TCM, five elements, all these diagnostic understandings that gets downloaded into our brain. And then every single time a patient comes along, we revert back to that same mechanism for understanding the world. Over a period of time, then we learn how to turn that into a diagnosis, how to turn that into points, how to turn that into herbs. And it's that chain of events that, when we get it right, that's how our intent is guided. Something I notice in my own practice is that when someone comes in with a pattern and I can see the pattern straight away, I know the points, or I know the herbs that I need to give, they respond really quickly. It's only when I can't pick out diagnostically what's going on with them easily, my intent isn't clear. So then there's no linear process or no, it's not really linear, but there's no process in understanding. And if we think about how far back sort of TCM theory goes and the 2000 years of evolution of the process, the debate, what essentially we're doing when we sort of go through this diagnostic process is we're funneling in 2000 years of information through our brains to the tip of our finger as we insert the needle. And that is intent. We're using 2000 years of information guided through our own nervous system into our fingers, into our patient. And that's intent. Intent for me isn't, oh, I'm just setting my intent now and solve all problems kind of thing. That's not how it works. It can be a repeatable process. So yeah, that's intent. In five elements, earth element, if we think about food, earth element is how we relate to taking in from the outside, how we process, how we digest. So think about chewing something over. Someone's chewing something over, thoughts, chewing over food. Either they eat too much food, they have too many thoughts, or they don't eat enough food and they're disconnected from taking things in, can't process. And then on the emotional level, that results in this overthinking, too many thoughts, too many things to digest that we can't get into, basically. Then if we move on to metal, think about the poor. This idea of linking to the lungs. And the big emotion associated with that is letting go, which I think in our world, letting go is probably one of the things that we struggle with generally. I mean, I know I do or have done in the past. And thinking about the breath and the lungs, the powers that entering and exiting, the breath comes and goes. Our bowel movements, everything comes and goes, lets go. We're constantly letting go of everything all the time. But yet mentally, if we've got a sticking point around spirit and around lungs, whether we've been shamed for grief or our constitutional imbalances around grief, and we hold on to it, so everything we have trouble processing and letting go of. Like the phrase we always say, I picked this up from a pal of mine who, I think she was a nurse. Yeah, she was a nurse. And she'd say, you need to learn to let go of your shit. That's letting go. And we don't do it enough. We hold on to things. We ruminate through it. And it's really that inability to let go that turns into this holding in the body. And I think there's a lot of people struggle with letting go because when they come into a clinical environment, they're disconnected from their body. And so they lie down on the table and they're so uptight, they can't let go to relax in a treatment. And then when you put an acupuncture needle in them, all of a sudden they're like, I don't know what this feeling is. What is happening to me? And I turn around and go, this is what relaxation feels like. You've just never experienced it before. Because no one's ever learned how to let go, how to be in their body, and how their body feels when it's not holding on to a thought, a feeling, all of that stuff. From an emotional sense, then, grief, inability to experience grief, people can't cry. I think men probably have a bigger trouble with this than anyone because it's just a generalization, but so many men just don't know how to display that as an emotion. Grief is seen to be so, like crying is seen to be so weak and so kind of needy. I think people cut themselves off from that. And then fear, coming from the water element. There's a couple of different aspects to fear. There's like anxiety we think of, but anxiety can relate to any of the emotions. You can have excess joy that leads to anxiety. You can have excess anger that leads to anxiety. Like anxiety is an experience, almost comes from an overstimulation of any of the emotions You know, overthinking can lead to anxiety. Holding on to grief can lead to anxiety. But when we think of fear, fear is the desire to run away, like saber-toothed tiger, do one. And what the will, the jur is how we turn fear into wisdom. So what's the experience that I've had? What's the thing that terrifies me? And then what's the lesson that I learn that I can then integrate into my life experience? And then use that on an ongoing basis to live a more useful life, to live a more sort of gentle life. Or if you think about it from a Taoist perspective, that's where Wu Wei comes in, this idea of forceless action. When we become wise enough to know how to do things without force, that's where it becomes natural. And that's what wisdom can be. That's really what we're trying to all cultivate as practitioners. This idea of someone comes in to the room, we stand, we look around, and we go, I can see that, and I don't have to force myself. I just act spontaneously, and it happens all by itself. It's a cultivation of skill over a long period of time. So anyone who's ever had a skill, anyone who's ever performed a sport or any kind of hobby eventually gets to the point where you become like a master, the 10,000 hours. And that's wisdom, really, knowing how to do something without effort. There's also that fight or flighty moment of running away, which the juror and, you know, when to stand and fight and when to run away. Weirdly, the people who fight are the ones who are going to die. So actually there's sometimes some benefit in being a coward and legging it. Like, being a hero isn't always the best thing to do. And that's wisdom, right? Knowing when to pick your fights. There's so many people who want to fight all the time. We'd probably live in a far more peaceful world if there were more cowards. What else have we got? Our last one, Hun. So anger. And anger's like that really useful emotion. No, anger's the one that puts us in the fight usually. But thinking about anger, we see a lot of it in the world right now. Like, a lot of angry people. If we think about what anger does for us, it's really this. Anger comes from when the hun is constrained. So we talk about liver qi stagnation. We talk about how when the liver doesn't free flow, there is either depression, which is yue, it's a different experience of constraint, like the body's held, which is super common and often confused with grief. Some people have constraint and not grief, but they feel sad, like that's depression as opposed to sadness. And then there's the other way, which is the outward expression of it, where we turn a bit like a resistor. And the stagnation comes because the hun is no longer able to go off and do that journey of going off into the unknown and seeing sort of the future, seeing something new. We all know if you've got sort of inspired, if you live a meaningful life where you're doing the things you enjoy all the time, you keep saying, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. Like, at the moment I'm on this, like, I just started skateboarding again after years and just having the best time in lockdown, just learning to skate again and like getting injured and falling over and just having a blast. But then having this long list of things I want to do, because it's like my hun is like, oh yeah, that thing just keeps bringing back information. But when we're stagnant, when we're constrained, our hun can't do that anymore. There's no way for it to connect to the world outside or the world inside, so we feel stuck. And this feeling of stuckness eventually, if it stays for too long, turns to anger. That's the overstimulation. Now, anger in some sense is one of the most useful emotions because it gets stuff done. Think about all those civil rights movements that, you know, if someone hadn't been so angry, it would have never happened. Like something has to happen sometimes to make the world a better place. But then we can also have the overstimulation of it. So now people get angry about small things that aren't necessarily, like, they choose the wrong fights. They choose to keep fighting all the time. Probably the, you know, the again, using the wisdom of the Jur, it's choose your battles. But anger is useful. Anger is forceful. Anger is setting boundaries. You know, when someone steps into your world, it's been able to say, no, this is where I am and this is how I see it. And I'm okay with saying no to you. And that no being forceful. And then if someone steps hard enough, it's like it should be thunder and lightning. The I Ching is like you'd call it the, I think it's Chen, which is hexagram. Is it 50? No, 52 is mountain. But anyway, shock. Anger should come like shock. Like it should just explode. It should be like no, direct, done, over. But what we have, this ongoing cultivation of anger. So we watch enough news, we watch enough like social media, eventually we just live with this burning sense of anger in the background, which is actually the most destructive, because it should be expressed and let go of. If we're constantly holding on to us, that cycle, that buildup of heat in the pathology of liver system, for example, that's the thing which causes, you know, unexpressed anger, or holding on to anger on an ongoing basis is where illness kind of comes from, I think. Well, they all can lead to illness, but in particular, anger seems to, you know, you see a lot of people like steaming kettles on a stove at the moment.
Okay, do you want to maybe elaborate a little bit on that and go into maybe how, and this is where even you could bring in maybe more of the seven emotions, but how they can manifest as physical manifestations. So you gave a little analogy already on kind of the lung and letting go, or large intestine, I should say, with the bowel movements. But could you maybe touch on going through the five elements on how those emotions connect maybe to a physical manifestation?
Big one for the heart, for example, is, we think about that first. I'll just keep going around and keep going around the cycle. Let's just keep going around the cycle. Makes it easier that way. Think about it from a heart perspective. The heart is connecting to the mind. So, you know, the shin, there's no separation between the two. So what are the systems in which that would express itself? What are the, you know, what are the tissues? What are the body fluids? Like, that's how you have to kind of break it down. Because often what happens for people when they're treating Shen disorders, in our culture at least, I'm guessing it's fairly similar in Australia. Like, I've not treated anyone there, but generally the way that our medicine works is we have, you go to your doctor for physical medicine and you go to your psychotherapist if you've got an emotional problem. And they don't always meet as like this clash between the two. So what I tend to see in clinic is that people come and they want to talk about emotions the way they would with a psychotherapist. And they don't have to at all. Like, that's the good thing about what we do with acupuncture and Chinese medicine, is that they don't have to tell us anything emotional to know how to treat them. And that's the useful thing about the signs and symptoms. That's sort of a really helpful thing, that you can get someone to come in, walk into the room, you can actually say, like, be quiet, lie down, and I'm just going to take your pulse and you can do it. But if we think about it from a way in which organ systems express, you know, palpitations for the heart, insomnia, because of the link between the heart blood and the link between heart blood and how that anchors the mind at night to be able to rest. But then that also links into the liver blood. So then you get into this, is it heart pathology? Is it liver pathology? You might differentiate that between dreams, or it might be the palpitations aspect that really does it. You might be thinking red in the face, more sweaty, these kind of things, especially when someone's expressing full heat in the heart. another way that someone can express a heart pathology is they might say, like, I've got heaviness in my heart, that kind of like pain in the chest, which is like chest chi stagnation. Another way is when you get into the link more between the heart and the sort of spleen stomach dynamic, is you hear someone say like, oh, I'm eating my heart out. You know, that emotional eating thing where someone comes along and they're just like, I can't stop eating. And you realize they've had their heart broken, or they find that food is the thing that suppresses the heart fire that's overstimulated. So earth element, signs and symptoms, you're going to be thinking in the realms of, well, maybe lack of interest in food. That can be like a spleen chi deficiency. Or you may notice stomach heat would be excess appetite. Diarrhea, loose stools from a spleen chi deficiency. You might notice that someone's got reflux. You might notice that someone's got like that constant can't take anything in. And that comes with that anxiety overthinking mechanism. I'm trying to think of other ways. The complex thing about emotions is you can't always associate one directly. When we just get into looking at patterns, it's far more complex. Like, I try and simplify TCM down to, you know, organ systems and signs and symptoms, but you can always have another system which causes a sign and symptom. Bloating, but if we think about just digestion system, bloating, fullness, all of these kind of things can indicate spleen and stomach system is out of balance. Loose stools, constipation, that can indicate that. But then you've also got patterns where you'll see someone with a liver pathology that's their main pattern. And that can be stagnation. Stagnation of fullness leads to heat. You know, someone's really angry, so angry that they can't go to the toilet. That's another side of it. With metal element, I don't think that's so specific in terms of always lung related. Like, you can have just people who just can't let go of stuff. But often you'll notice with people who've got a lot of grief is that their chest is sunken. I've been treating someone lately who they'd had a really difficult experience with grief as a kid, and they can't take a breath in. They can't take deep breaths. It's like they get stuck. And whenever they try and experience an emotion, their chest, they grasp for breath because they can't take an emotion in. And what they've found is that letting out, you know, those, you're a mom, you'll know those baby tears, those kid tears where they just scream and let it out. And like, it's really visceral, like gut level emotional release. When someone has that, it's like whole body is let go. And I think that's one of the things with lungs, is that people, there's not enough space in their chest to allow all of that emotion. Long-term manifestation of that from a lungs perspective, you can see people who had trouble with grief in the past. I've seen it a few times where they've ended up a smoker. Smoking, in some sense, gives a fullness to the lungs that sadness and grief takes away. You know, it helps you feel a warmth. It helps you feel like something is inside you in your chest. And what we really should have when we feel sort of that connection to what's meaningful from grief, because that's what grief is. When we lose something meaningful, we feel sad. We lose someone we love, we feel sad. That's normal. And the thing that we learn is that those things are meaningful, and that can give us a sense of value and meaning and purpose in our lives, which should give us esteem and confidence, because we're connecting to the things that we really value. When we feel that persistent grief over time and we look for something to fill the void of that grief, we look for things that are unhealthy. So smoking can be one. And then when you see someone smoke for a long period of time, they've had grief, then they go into, they get, for example, people I've treated who've had, I want to say PCOS, but that's different. COPD, like chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, emphysema, these kind of things. You can see how people have struggled through their life to process grief and they've done these unhealthy habits. Not every single time, but very much this connection to grief, being able to take a breath in or not, really can lead to sort of ongoing sort of lung dysfunctions. Kidneys and lower back pain, usually the people who are too driven, too much willpower, the ones that burn out their kidneys too much, and then they end up with lower back pain. You know, the constant use of the yangzhi eventually leads to yang deficiency. Too much lifting, too much sitting at a desk, all of these things on a very practical level. If you sit all day typing, you lose your core strength because sitting down is one of the worst kinds of things we can be doing day to day. And so that's where our body starts to wave the red flag of I'm in pain. And then that's where we're learning, overusing the willpower, the emotion of the jerk. And what we have to do with those people when they come for treatment is not just settle down their mind in terms of what's driving them to want to work that much all the time. Is that driven by fear? But if we just alleviate the back pain, what happens is that they just carry on living the same cycle. So there's an education there in terms of teaching people how not to force themselves to keep doing too much, not to force themselves for too long. And that way they can get into, well, what's a healthier habit? What's a healthier way of using the wisdom of working to not overuse my willpower, to not over be driven by the fear of, if I don't stop working, then I'm not going to have any money. If I don't stop working, what's going to happen? That's a modern day fear as well, really. Liver, gallbladder and the hun and anger. I always think of the weight of the world on the shoulders. It always seems to be like this thing, people walking around holding so much tension, and that's the gallbladder. Migraines, most of the patterns of migraines that I treat are people have either got excess liver fire or liver yang rising or liver qi stagnation. Throw into the mix a bit of blood stagnation, but from an emotional perspective, it's usually some kind of overexpression of anger or underexpression, some kind of deep frustration which is held in someone's body that they're not letting out in a healthy way, and they sit simmering on the stove like a kettle, the whistle's going off like, yeah, we need to release this, and it's got nowhere to go, so rise up to the head. Say 8 out of 10 people have got some kind of liver pattern of migraine that I see in clinic. And yeah, neck, shoulders, migraines, dizziness, vertigo, they all seem to have this same sort of similar pathological root around anger, I would say. Yeah, those would probably be your main ones.
Okay, that's great. That's a great explanation. I think sometimes people, I mean, it's a very naturopathic way of looking at things, is you don't really connect this emotional aspect to the physical manifestation of a condition. And that's why I love Chinese medicine, you know, being both naturopathic and Chinese medicine trained, is Chinese medicine explains a lot of this stuff and how it can show up as a physical ailment. So it's really important to, you know, have this conversation and for people to understand that our emotions do actually lead to disease if untreated. And so just for someone that might be listening to this podcast and really connecting with some of the things you're saying, maybe in relation to one element specifically or a combination of a few, just because I'm mindful of time. What is it they can do about, you know, how can they work with a practitioner? What can they do about, you know, supporting their emotional health from a Chinese medicine perspective?
There's a couple of things that I usually recommend that are quite simple. And walking, like stepping out from the world that they're in, like 10,000 steps of walking isn't just good for your body. You know, I think 10,000 steps has been recently sort of denied as being the optimal amount, but disconnecting from all the things and just going for a walk around. Mm. Looking at things, like using your senses, smelling things, touching things, walking on the grass with no shoes on, sitting down for a meal, and rather than thinking, oh, what are the calories that I've got to eat? But actually sitting and being present and being like, wow, this is really nice. There was a friend of mine, like when I was back in my chefing days, I lived down in Cornwall, which is like southwest of England. It's kind of like the closest you could get to living in like Byron Bay, but in England, apart from it's freezing cold and there's no waves. Freezing cold, no waves. But you know, the idea is right. But there was a guy I met there and he was like, how do you choose to live your life? And he said, if someone gives you an apple, do you just eat the apple and throw it away? Or do you bite into it and savor every bite? Because if you think about there's like a sourness or a sweetness to an apple as you bite in and the crunch, do you appreciate the crunch? Do you appreciate that flavor, the texture? And that's really how we can start to step out of emotion and into the world, like experiencing things, feeling things. So many people, the reason why they have so many emotional things going on is that they're living a life that they don't want to live. And I have a bit of a thing. One of my specialisms is getting people to quit their job with acupuncture. I have about 10 people who've come to me and they'll be like, I'm really fed up. And then do 6 weeks of acupuncture. They come back and I'm like, yeah, I've quit my job. And it became a bit of a thing for a while where I was a bit concerned that it kept happening. So I don't tell them to quit. But what happens is people realize that I'm sitting at a desk all day. It makes me miserable. I'm doing this thing that makes me really unhappy. And so I'm not saying anyone has to quit their job, but the thing is looking for something meaningful, something that actually makes, you know, what makes your soul sing. Mm. It could be, like for me lately, it's been skateboarding. It used to be guitar. It used to be, well, like Chinese medicine and acupuncture is the thing that makes my soul sing, but it can be anything. It don't have to be a Taoist monk kind of wake up every day and do Qigong and just like live this, you know, only eat bland foods. You can do anything as long as it's meaningful to you. And I think that's a really important thing for someone. You know, it doesn't involve sitting and meditating for an hour a day. It's find things that make you tick, find the things that make you enjoy your life, and find the people as well. That's one of the useful things about, you know, there's always this Taoism versus Confucianism idea between sort of Chinese medicine and philosophy schools. Confucianism is really about social connection, about having healthy social connections and how those healthy social connections make the world a better place. You know, like if we have a healthy social connection, then we take that to our broader community. Our community has a healthy connection. Every one of those connections makes the world a better place. Like in, I said before, in Soaring Above. And modern living puts us in boxes, puts us in places where we're disconnected. We don't have such a strong sense of community and family necessarily. And I think that's probably the thing that people could do. Don't think about calories. Don't think about, you know, you don't have to go and you don't even have to go through therapy. If someone is listening and they're really struggling, then I would advise it, because it can be really great. Like finding someone who really knows how to work through it that way. But doing small things day to day that are meaningful, meaningful exercise, meaningful food, and savor it, savor every moment of it. They're the things to do, I would say.
Okay, I love the way you, very philosophical way of expressing emotions and how to find connection again. Are there any books or TED Talks that you'd recommend for your patients or listeners to check out?
Sort of like Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson is one that I usually recommend to people.
What about Chinese medicine?
Oh, Chinese medicine books.
In relation to maybe the sharing or the emotions and connecting, like a, you know.
I don't usually recommend Chinese medicine books for Shen because it's too technical usually. If there are a couple that I'd recommend to really, I mean, if you want to go deep or relatively deep, there's Elizabeth Rochat de la Valle, Aspects in Spirit, which is really good. Or there's Seven Emotions, like they're really good books, but they're very, you know, they're translations from the classics. Mm-hmm. You've got to, like, I find that hard reading from a practitioner who, you know, I wrote my dissertation on herbs for the Shen, like, and I find that hard reading. Easier going one, if you want to learn a little bit more about like your constitutional factor, there's like the Angie Hicks, who's one of the five element school practitioners here, and I think it's called Healing Your Emotions. So it doesn't go so much into the Shen, but it lets you know. There's a really cool little quiz at the end where you can find out your CF, which is, I think in their thing, it's a constitutional factor or causative factor. And so if you're a fire type, it will tell you all the things that you need to do for a fire type. If you're a wood type, it will help with that. That's a really good book. And yeah, Healing Your Emotions, I think it's cool. Probably the best one if someone really wants to go into it from a very preliminary, non-technical perspective, I would say that's the place to go.
And you recommended a book earlier on in the talk too. What was that book called?
Oh, so the Soaring Above. Soaring Above is written by a neuropsychologist, I think he is. So I can't think of his name. I can have a look and let you know. Put in the descriptions below or something like that. But yeah, Soaring Above, that's using our adult brain rather than our child brain. I've been looking at a lot of reparenting work recently. And there's a book by a guy called Alfie Cohn, which is called Unconditional Parenting, which is great for parents, but actually it's how adults should be talking to themselves as well. That's a really good book that's non-TCM related, but it's very much helpful. There's another book which, for an emotional perspective and learning resilience, called The Obstacle is the Way by a guy called Ryan Holiday. I recommend that a lot, which is about Stoic philosophy, which is very different to what you'd expect. Like Stoicism, you expect to be very, oh, we don't experience emotions, but actually it's about learning to feel emotions in the deepest sense and how to use them in a way which is useful. And that's helped me through some really difficult stuff over the past few years. So yeah, really recommend that.
Right. Any Taoist books you recommend? I'm a big fan of Winnie and the Tao. I think it's Winnie and the Tao.
The Tao of Pooh and Piglet.
Yeah, that's it.
That is a good one. Like, if you want to easy tap into Taoism, that's probably the way to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's an Alan Watts thing where he talks about, I mean, it's Zen, but you should be able to find it in all books, really. I know you want a recommendation. I mean, Tao Te Ching, like,
yeah,
that's me. I'm a like a hoarder of different editions and sort of translations of the Tao Te Ching and the I Ching. If you really want to know where this stuff comes from and you really want to understand it, like get the Richard Wilhelm version of the I Ching. And that's really where yin yang theory, where all of this began. I'd say that's probably a good place to start with it. That breaks down a lot of how to deal with different circumstances that come up, how to understand the change in the universe. You know, that sometimes, this is the most Taoist idea, I think, is that sometimes when things go very wrong, they're actually going right. And sometimes when things are going right, they're actually going very wrong. And that's probably a useful thing that I've learned from the I Ching, that the way that we need to behave in the moments which are, you know, things are going really well, how should I behave? Like, take a minute. You've got to make sure that this isn't sort of some divine comedy that's coming to trip you up, basically. I Ching, definitely.
So that's great. Some great recommendations there for our book lovers. And I used to collect books madly as well prior to having children, and now I'm a big podcast fan. So we'll dive into a little bit more in the part two of the technical side of things. If our, you know, if there is someone that's listening and wants to hear more, we're going to have a part two, which is going to be more for practitioners, which we'll go into next. But if someone's listening to this podcast and they're saying, I just want a practitioner, I want to have a consult, where can our listeners find you, Phil?
So I'm based in Manchester in the UK, and I work from Manchester Metropolitan University. And if you want to find me, you can find me on Instagram is a good place. If you want to see some of my Chinese medicine and acupuncture related memes, you can always drop me a message there. That's Go and See Phil. And then you can find me on Facebook it's Philip Trubshaw Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine. It's not as concise as Go and See Phil. Yeah, that's the best place to find me, I would say.
Definitely. Well, thank you for taking the time out to give us some insight to understanding the emotions from a traditional Chinese medicine perspective. It's been great chatting and listening to your insight, as you're such an expert on this topic, and going through those, you know, different emotions, how they can actually connect to something physical in the body. It's really nice to hear it from a more philosophical point of view as well. So thanks so much for joining us today, Phil.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. I have been a practitioner of naturopathic and Chinese medicine for over a decade. I have a master's degree of health science and I am an academic lecturer at Australia's leading natural medicine college. I am available worldwide online for bookings. Simply go to sandyrosshealth.com.